Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
The Two-Footed Podcast is brought to you by EPLindex.com and our presenting sponsor, Liberty Shield. Liberty Shield is a VPN provider. A virtual privacy network allows you to go online, change your location, access things you're geo-blocked from, while keeping your data safe. So, as an example, if you are a UK expat and want access to BBC iPlayer to watch Match of the Day, or ITV Hub, or All Four, but you get that message that says this content is not available in your location, a Liberty Shield VPN gets you around that block, allows you to watch whatever you want on those services while also keeping your data safe. And it goes further than that. It allows you to open up Netflix's entire library by just changing your IP address. Liberty Shield is the number one rated VPN provider on Trustpilot with 5-star ratings across the board. So go to libertyshield.com right now, use the code EPL25 and get either the hardware package or the software package. The hardware package is a router that you plug into your existing router, and any item you want to change the IP address on, be it your phone or your television, you connect that to the new Liberty Shield router. All other items can remain connected to your existing router. There's also a software package, which is instantly downloadable to your device and you can get using straight away. Again, libertyshield.com, EPL25 for 25% off at checkout. We're also brought to you by Home of Hopcroft, a giftware and homeware company located in Scotland but shipping worldwide. Check out homeofhopcroft.co.uk and do check out the EPL Index and Anfield Index shops, which you'll find on Etsy. Use the codes EPL10 or RED10 for 10% off at checkout. And lastly, do remember to check out A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. That podcast is on this feed before every Premier League match week. And then the EPL Roundtable, hosted by Kevin DeVries, on its own EPL Roundtable feed. So just search EPL Roundtable in your podcast device. And that's out after every match week. Now, on with the show. What's good, boys and girls? Two-Footed Podcast. Today is Monday, the 29th of April. Hope you all had a very pleasant weekend and welcome to the show. So we will get into the weekend's Premier League action, despite the fact that it really upset me. West Ham 2, Liverpool 2. Liverpool's season is ending on a massive disappointment, obviously, but they're getting exactly what they deserve for their performance level. Like, this is not a thing where they're playing well and dropping points. They're playing dreadfully and dropping points. This was yet another poor display. I mean, they had all of the ball, they had all of the shots, and yet the goals come from Andy Robertson with what was unquestionably a mishit, and an own goal where Cody Gakpo's shot was going wherever it was going, and it hit four different West Ham players on its way into the net. Jarrod Bowen had put West Ham one up on 43 minutes. Robertson equalised just after the break. How Jarrod Bowen, by the way, was allowed that much space. Shameful defensive work by, it was one of the Dutch lads, I can't remember which one. Robertson equalised with the kind of sliced miss hit, which I think fools the goalkeeper. Areola's own goal, which was from the Gakpo shot, put Liverpool back in front. But then Mikel Antonio, it's just very, very poor defending by Gerald Kwanzaa. It's a lovely little clipped cross in by Bowen. West Ham get themselves an equaliser, and to be fair, they fully deserve the equaliser. There's no argument for me on that one. Wolves 2, Luton 1. Hwang puts Wolves 1 up on 39 minutes. Totti Gomes makes it 2 on 50. Wolves probably should have been out of sight, although, to their credit, Luton had had a couple of half-decent chances, but Nelson Semedo missed a good chance. Hwang missed a good chance. I felt like Wolves should have been 3 or 4 up. Carlton Morris gets one back on 80 minutes, but it's not enough. But as results went, it's not a terrible result for Luton. They still have a chance, a strong chance of staying up. Fulham 1, Crystal Palace 1. A decent game. Michael Olise should put Palace 1 up in the first half. Issa Diop should then put Fulham 1 up, but both of them obviously miss. Rodrigo Menez scores a really nice headed goal after a good move on 52 to put Fulham ahead. But then Jeff Schlupp with a contender for goal of the season. Little ball played into him by Adam Wharton, who had a really good game. One touch, the ball is kind of, it's a low bounce in front of him off the touch. And he strikes it absolutely perfectly. And it arrows into the top corner. An absolutely sensational goal. Goalkeeper had no chance. Man United 1, Burnley 1. United should have had this game wrapped up multiple times, but just wouldn't take their chances. But Anthony puts them one up on 79 minutes. Really poor ball by Sander Berge. Puts Anthony in, and he does well to keep his balance after Berge gets back and tries to nudge him off the ball, and he finishes well. But United are United, and foolish things are always going to happen when they've only got a one-goal lead. 87 minutes, ball into the box. Onana, who to his credit had made a couple of outstanding saves in the game, comes barreling off his line for no real reason and just completely takes out the Burnley attacker. We've seen him do this on multiple occasions this season and get away with it. He did not get away with it this time, though the referee didn't initially give it for reasons that the referee should be made to explain. Amdoni steps up and finishes very coolly to give Burnley a share of the spoils. Our final 3 p.m. game then, Newcastle 5, Sheffield United 1. Sheffield United confirmed relegated to the Championship. They did go 1 up through Ahmed Hodzic. They should have gone 2-0 up through Cameron Archer. It was good defending by Dan Byrne on the block. Isak would make it 1-1. Then Sheffield United should go ahead again when, I can't remember who rounded the goalkeeper, but Dan Byrne gets back and makes another good block. But the second half was a procession. Guimaraes scores with a header on 54. Isak scores from the penalty spot on 61. a calamity leads to a Ben Osborne own goal on 65, and Callum Wilson makes it 5-1 on 72. Nice to see him back from injury and scoring. And yeah, Sheffield United now 10 points behind Nottingham Forest with only 3 games left, thus confirmed relegated to the Championship. In the late kickoff, we got Everton 1, Brentford 0. Idrissa Gana Gueye with the only goal of the game. Though Everton did hit the woodwork on multiple occasions, this technically was the only shot they had on target. Brentford had a couple of good chances. Jordan Pickford made one very good save from Ivan Toney, but that will confirm Everton in the Premier League next season. 36 points now achieved, and with Luton having only 25, they cannot catch either Brentford or Everton before the end of the season. So both teams stay up, so both will be happy enough, but neither should be overly thrilled with how their season has gone. Late game then was Aston Villa 2, Chelsea 2. Villa will be furious here with themselves. Cucurella own goal on 4 minutes. Morgan Rodgers on 42. They're ahead. Not comfortable, because Chelsea are playing quite well, but Villa with a 2-0 lead at home would expect to see that out. A really nice finish from Noni Madueke on 62 minutes. And then an outstanding goal by Conor Gallagher. Left-footed curling shot from the edge of the box on 81. Chelsea felt aggrieved afterwards, feeling that they had a goal disallowed that shouldn't have been disallowed, but it was absolutely a clear foul. Badiashile shouldered Diego Carlos in the back to nudge him out of the way and then hooked the ball across. De Sassi heads home. No question, though, a stonewall foul and a free out the right decision. On to Sunday. Bournemouth 3, Brighton 0, Senesi, Unal and Justin Kluivert with the goals. Brighton's team, I mean, it was a bit of a case of who when you saw the team. Ofaya at right back, O'Mahony up front. This is a Brighton team that has suffered a lot of injuries this season and right now has a lot more. And we saw another poor performance from Valentin Barco at left back because he's not a left back. Igor didn't play well. They brought on Adam Webster to replace him. He's had a shocker of a season. Lewis Dunks had a poor season, had another poor performance here. Gross and Gilmore is just never working as a double pivot in the Premier League. The front four, I mean, I don't know much about O'Mahony, but the three behind, Buenanote, Adingra, and João Pedro is a 10. They're all very good players, and they all fit those positions very well. We did see Danny Welbeck come on to waste everybody's time. We did see Julio Enciso come on, missed one good chance, then almost scored a worldie. But yeah, I mean, Brighton just look like they can't wait for the season to end. They just like look like they've had enough. And you'd wonder, will the same manager be there next season? I don't think they'll want to change, but if he gets an offer, I think he'll look to go. Tottenham 2, PGMOL 3. You'll rarely see a game where one side gets every decision go in their favour and every decision is the wrong one, but this was one of them. They had a similar outcome last season at the Emirates against Liverpool. But Arsenal, I mean, they're just incredibly fortunate with these refereeing decisions. Whether it's because they cried so much about how mean everybody has been to them, I don't know. But the first goal is a corner kick taken by Bukayo Saka. Ben White fouls Vicario and then runs away, having knocked him off balance. Corner comes in, there's chaos, and Højbjerg puts it into his own net. But if Vicario isn't fouled, he potentially saves it. 27 minutes, Kulusevski is fouled in the Arsenal box. He cuts inside. He cuts in front of Trossard. Trossard clips his heels. It's a blatant foul. It's not given. Arsenal work it out. long ball from Havertz, finds Saka, and Saka does brilliantly from there. To their credit, once Arsenal got the ball back, they were absolutely outstanding in that move. But there was a foul by Trossard that should have called play back, either for a penalty or for a free kick on the edge of the area, because if the goal wasn't given, it would have gone back to the foul. And then on 38 minutes, it's another corner for Arsenal. It's another foul by Ben White on Vicario. This one is more important because if there's no foul, Vicario likely comes and punches this ball. But that is a foul by Ben White, and he's gotten away with it. Spurs also had a goal disallowed in that first half for offside, and it was, to say the least, a very questionable offside. In the second half, Christian Romero got one back for Spurs after a dreadful error by David Raya. And Spurs should have gotten themselves back in it earlier, but it took until the 87th minute from a Heung-min Son penalty. Again, another bizarre refereeing decision. So the ball comes into the box. Ben Davies is the Spurs player in question. Declan Rice kicks him about as hard as he can with the ball nowhere near. And the referee, who's standing 5 feet away, doesn't give it. Just doesn't give it. Stands and looks at it and doesn't give it. Absolutely baffling refereeing decision. Baffling VAR and refereeing performance. Arsenal, to their credit, they did win the game. But Spurs will feel furious after that. If the referee gets decisions right, at best, Arsenal score one of their goals. At best. The first, you would maybe give. The second and third, you definitely wouldn't. And Spurs would have potentially had a penalty and then gone on to score two in the second half. Yeah, baffling. Nottingham Forest 0, Manchester City 2. Just a very run-of-the-mill win for City. Now, say that. Chris Wood missed two sitters, but Guardiola put City 1 up on 32 minutes with a flicked header. Haaland made it 2 on 71. City just look inevitable. They just look inevitable. They're going to win the league. They're a point behind Arsenal right now, but they have the game in hand. They're going to win the league. Arsenal can win all their games, and City are still going to beat them to the title. And that's heartbreaking for Arsenal, putting everything into this. And they've done incredibly well, to their credit. Like, they, refereeing decisions aside, Arsenal have done really, really well to get where they are. But there's just something about City where it just feels inevitable. You look at the run-ins. Arsenal have Bournemouth home, United away, Everton home, City, Wolves home, Fulham away. Tottenham away is tough, but I think City will go there and win. And then West Ham home. The City are winning all four. City have nothing else to draw their focus now. It's just the league games. And yes, they did pick up another injury with Ederson, but the gap between Ederson and Ortega is not big. Ortega is more than good enough to see City over the line. And frankly, I think it will devastate Arsenal to have had the run they've had in the back half of the season and still fall short. That will be very, very tough to swallow. Liverpool are third on 75. Villa fourth on 67. Liverpool are guaranteed Champions League football next year. Spurs do have two games in hand, but they're 15 points behind with a 26-goal disadvantage to overcome. So they're not overcoming that. Liverpool will be in the Champions League next season. And I think in all likelihood, Villa will as well. Now 7 points clear. Admittedly, Spurs have two games in hand, but I still think it'll be too much. Then we're back to Manchester United on 54. Newcastle 53, West Ham 49. They've played a game more than both Newcastle and Manchester United. Chelsea in 48, 33 games played, so two in hand on West Ham and two in hand on the team below them, which is Bournemouth, on also 48. Wolves have 46 from 35. Brighton 44 from 34. Things are going badly, like I said. Fulham 43 from 35. Crystal Palace 40 from 35. Everton 36 from 35. Brentford 35 from 35. A point a game is just so poor. But then it's four teams. So we have a title race. We have a real title race this season. We have still a battle for fourth. And then a battle for sixth between United and Newcastle. But then we have this relegation scrap. As I said, Sheffield United gone. We'll come to them in a second. Nottingham Forest, 26 points. Luton, 25. Burnley, 24. Forest's remaining games. Sheffield United away. Nottingham Forest. And Chelsea at home. Sheffield United away. Chelsea home. They're both winnable games. They're going to probably need to win one. And then we'll get to the last day of the season. Luton. Everton home. Everton are now safe, so that could be a winnable game. West Ham away. You just don't know at West Ham. You just don't know which one will turn up. And then Burnley. Newcastle home. Spurs home. Spurs away. Sorry. Newcastle home, Spurs away. They're both tough games. On the final day, Luton play Fulham. Burnley host Nottingham Forest. Forest do not want to go into that game in a position where if they lose, they're down. They cannot go into that game in that position. So that's why I said I think they've got to win one of their next two, at least. I think Luton could win one of their next two. Now, that would still mean that Forest would need to go and win against Burnley, because if Luton beat Fulham, Luton would jump them in the table. But that's going to get very, very nervy. And of course, we still have to hear what the outcome of Forest's appeal is going to be. Because potentially, there's, four more points to be tacked on to their target? So they might already be almost safe, but we don't know yet. On the flip side, maybe more points get taken off them. Because that can happen with the appeal. But let's get on to something funnier, which is Sheffield United. 97 goals conceded. They are now, in terms of goals conceded, the second worst defence in Premier League history behind Swindon. But, of course, Swindon played four more games. So they are now, goal per game, they are now the worst team in Premier League history when it comes to goals conceded. And they've still got three games left. Home to Forest. Away to Everton. Home to Spurs. They are almost certainly conceding 101 or more. Based on how many they currently concede per game, we're looking at about 106. 105 to 106. But would anybody be surprised if they just gave up? Would anybody be surprised if Forest put four or five past them? If Everton put two past them? If Spurs put four or five past them? I don't think anyone would be surprised by that. Like, you just have no chance if you're going to concede this amount of goals. You've got no chance if you even concede. Like, the next worst defence in the league is Luton, right? And Luton have a dreadful defence this year. But they've still conceded 20 goals less than Sheffield United. Burnley have a terrible defence. They've conceded 27 less. Forest have a bad defence. 35 less. Brentford have a bad defence. 37 less. Palace and Brighton have not defended particularly well this year. 40 less. Like, you look up and down the league. And by the way, the fourth worst defensive record in the league is West Ham United. But it's still 32 goals less conceded than Sheffield United. We are in an era where defending just has gone out the window. There are three clubs in the entirety of the Premier League who've conceded 47 or less goals. They're the top three. We have four who've conceded less than 50. Less than 50. 50 is abysmal. And yet only four clubs have conceded less than 50. The top three and Everton. And Everton, with three games left, there's no guarantee they don't end up over 50. In all likelihood, they do end up with over 50 conceded, because they play Arsenal final day of the season. You'd expect Arsenal to score a couple. Now, their next two are Luton and Sheffield United. That's potentially two clean sheets there, which would give them five clean sheets in a row if they manage that, which would be a hell of an achievement coming off the back of a 6-0 defeat at Stamford Bridge to a mediocre Chelsea team. But Sheffield United have just been, it's genuinely embarrassing. Like, it genuinely is embarrassing. Let's go through the results. They start off and they look like a team that's going to make it very tough to play against. They play Palace on the opening day. They lose 1-0. Fair enough. Not a great start, but it is what it is. Then they play Nottingham Forest. They lose 2-1, but it's a late, late Chris Wood goal. Then they play City. Haaland scores. Sheffield United frustrate the life out of them. Bogle scores an 85 to equalise, but then a late Rodri goal gets City the win. Then they play Everton. They go one down. They fight their way back in front. They end up drawing 2-2. They go to Tottenham. They go one up. They end up losing to two very, very late goals. But to this point, nobody's conceded more than two than them. Yes, they only have 1 point, but they've been really competitive in every game. And then Newcastle batter them 8-0. Then they lose 2-0 to West Ham. They lose 3-1 to Fulham. They do give Manchester United a tough game and takes a DeLow worldie, but still. You're still losing. That's now five in a row. Go to the Emirates, you lose 5-0. That's six defeats in a row. Match week 11, you finally win a game. You beat Wolves 2-1 at home. Then you get a draw away to Brighton. That's not bad. Then you lose 3-1 home to Bournemouth. 5-0 away to Burnley is an unforgivable result alongside the 8-0. So that's two. You don't mind getting walloped away at Arsenal because they're a much better team than you. But Burnley are not a much better team, and you should never lose 8-0 at home. You should never lose heavily at home. That's two unforgivable results. They lose 2-0 at home to Liverpool. They beat Brentford 1-0 at home. They lose 2-0 away to Chelsea. They get a really good draw away to Villa. Then they lose at home to Luton. Go to City. Give them a bit of a game. It's not easy for City, but City ease through it. Lose 5-0 at home to Villa following a draw with West Ham and a win over Palace. You lose 5-0 at home to Brighton. You lose 6-0 at home to Arsenal. 2-2 with Bournemouth. 3-3 with Fulham. Lose 3-1 at Anfield. 2-2 with Chelsea. But like, we're into the part of the season where you need to be winning. You've won one game since the turn of the year. You've won 3 all season. Like, we know you're gone. 2-0 defeat at Brentford. 4-1 defeat at home to Burnley. Another shocker. 4-2 away to United. 5-1 away to Newcastle. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 times conceding 4 or more at home. You lost to Burnley over the season 9-1. Burnley have scored 38 league goals. 9 of them came in 2 games against Sheffield United. You've lost 3 games more than anyone else. You've won 2 games less than anyone else. And you've conceded 20 goals more than anyone else. You're the worst defensive team. You're the worst attacking team. Your goal difference is minus 63. The next worst is Burnley at minus 31. Like, that's appalling. Absolutely appalling. The next highest goal scored is actually Everton, which is funny. Everton have the second worst attack in the league and the fourth best defence. But that tells you that the defence has to be on point, because the defence is what's keeping Everton up this year. And it's very much what's sending Sheffield United down. He just can't get hammered that many times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times conceding 5 or more. Like, 13 goals conceded in their last 3 games. That is just atrocious. 3 wins. Chris Wilder was reappointed on the 5th of December. So he's won 2 games. Brentford home and Luton away. Did also beat Gillingham in the FA Cup, so congrats to him on that. Then conceded 5 again at home in the next round to Brighton. I just can't see how this would have been any worse under Heckenbottom, who wasn't backed properly in the summer and then got the heave-ho. But Wilder's done an abysmal job. 23 games, 3 wins, 5 draws, 15 defeats, a 13.04 win rate. He's won 6 of the last 34 games he's been in charge of, between here and Watford. And he didn't do a great job at Middlesbrough either. In fact, let's just have a quick look at Chris Wilder's record over his last 2 Premier League seasons. Because it won't make pretty reading. Right, he was sacked on the 13th of March in 2021. So, 13th of March puts it there. They played 10 games afterwards. So he oversaw 28 league games that season. 28 league games. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 wins and 2 draws. Okay, so that's 14 points that they had when he was sacked in 21-22. And this season, they had 5 points when he took over, and they now have 16 points. So my maths tells me that's 11 points he's taken. Plus the 14. 25 points. And he has overseen... hang on a sec. He's overseen... So there's 14 games before he took over, which means he's overseen 21 games. So that's 49 games that Chris Wilder has overseen in the last two seasons that Sheffield United have been in this division, and he's taken 25 points. That is absolutely honking. So I've just done a quick pause there to do a bit of counting. So yeah, 49 games for Chris Wilder, 25 points. They've scored 39 goals in those 49 games and conceded 103. Mental. Comical. But why they thought it was a good idea to bring him back, I've no idea. We'll go to break. We're back after this. Right, welcome back. So let's take a little wander around Europe and see what took place over the weekend. In Spain, there is a game tonight. It is Barcelona-Valencia, an 8 p.m. UK kickoff for those interested. We got Real Sociedad 0, Real Madrid 1, Arda Güler with the only goal of the game, super talented young player. Las Palmas 0, Girona 2. Lopez and Dovbyk with the goals for Girona. Almeria 1, Getafe 3, Alaves 3, Celta Vigo 0. Atletico Madrid 3, Athletic Club Bilbao 1. And that game had to be stopped for a time because of racist chants towards young Nico Williams. Rodrigo de Paul had put Atleti 1 up. Williams had equalised. Angel Correa and Unai Simon own goal gave Atleti the win. Cadiz 1, Mallorca 1, Granada 3, Osasuna 0, Villarreal 3, Rayo Vallecano 0, and in the Seville derby last night, Isco put Real Betis 1 up, but Quique Salas equalised for Sevilla, and we get a 1-1 draw. So Real top, 13 points clear, one more win, and they are league champions. Girona have, well, actually, I'm technically wrong there because Barcelona, while 14 points back, do have a game in hand, but they're not winning the league. Real are winning the league. Barca on 70 from 32, with Valencia also having 32. Everyone else has played 33 games. So you get Atleti on 64, Athletic Club on 58. La Real on 51, Real Betis on 49, Valencia 47, Villarreal 45, Getafe 43, Osasuna 39, Alaves 38, Sevilla 38, Las Palmas 37, Rayo Vallecano 34, Mallorca 32, Celta Vigo 31, Cadiz 26. 26. Granada 21. And Almeria 21. So Almeria are gone. Granada are as good as gone despite a late season push. And it will be a hell of an effort for Cadiz to overcome either Celta Vigo or Mallorca between now and the end of the season. In the Bundesliga, yet another late showing from Leverkusen. Bochum 3, Hoffenheim 2. Augsburg 0, Werder Bremen 3. Freiburg 1, Wolfsburg 2. Bayern 2, Eintracht Frankfurt 1. Another double for Harry Kane. Leipzig 4, Dortmund 1. Sancho put Dortmund 1 up. Openda scores. Sesko scores. 2-1 by half time. Simikin scores immediately after halftime, and Baumgartner wraps it up with 10 to go. A very, very comfortable win in the end for Leipzig. Leverkusen 2, Stuttgart 2. Stuttgart went 2-0 up in this one. Furyk and Undav scored in the 47th and 56th minute. Amin Adli pulled one back on 61. And then yet another late, late goal. Robert Andrich with the 96th-minute goal off a set piece to equalise and maintain the unbeaten run. Gladbach 0, Berlin 0. Mainz 1, Cologne 1. That was a big game at the foot of the table. Darmstadt 0, Heidenheim 1. So, Leverkusen have the title wrapped up. Everybody's aware of that. There's only three games left here as well. Bayern will be in the Champions League next year. It is all but certain that Stuttgart will be as well. They need one more win to be certain, but in truth, they probably have done enough already. They're 7 points ahead of Dortmund. Leipzig, with their win at the weekend, have opened a 5-point gap on Dortmund. So it looks like it will be Bayern, Stuttgart, and Leipzig joining Leverkusen, Dortmund into the Europa League, and as things stand, Eintracht Frankfurt looking good for the Conference League. Freiburg, Augsburg, Hoffenheim, Heidenheim, Werder Bremen, Wolfsburg, Gladbach can probably all head to the beach. Union Berlin and Bochum still at risk of ending up in the relegation playoff, only 2 points clear of Mainz. Mainz have turned things around quite well. They've been in better form of late, but they probably, as things stand, look likely to end up in the relegation playoff. Cologne almost certainly relegated, and Darmstadt have been relegated. In the French League over the weekend, PSG were crowned league champions. We'll come to that. Montpellier 1, Nantes 1. PSG 3, Le Havre 3, a late Goncalo Ramos goal. They had been 3-1 down in that one. They'd gone 1-0 behind. Barcola equalised. Then Andre Ayew, former Premier League legend, put Le Havre 2-1 up. Touré made it 3-1, but then Hakimi and Ramos with the late goals. Mbappe off the bench again. I assume it's resting for Champions League, but still, and Danilo Pereira playing, just nonsense. But in 3-3 draw, it's enough. Metz 1, Lille 2. Disappointing one for Metz. Although Lille are obviously a much better team, but at home they'd been hoping to win. Laurent 1, Toulouse 2, Clermont Foot 4, Reims 1. The Will still love fest of last year. Really is now, you know, shaking because it has not been a good season. Strasbourg 1, Nice 3. Good for Nice to sort of get themselves back on track. Rennes 4, Brest 5 in a game that can only be described as madness. So Rennes go 2 up within 10 minutes. Steve Mooney, who played for Huddersfield a few years back, he equalises, or he gets one back on 11. There's an own goal by Omari just after half-time to make it 2-2. Then Brest go 4-2 up. Martin Satriano scores. Maddie Camara scores. So from 2-0 down, they're now 4-2 up. Then Arthur Thiete scores, and then Martin Terrier scores. It's now 4-4. Lilian Brazier, in the 96th minute, with the winner. Huge, huge goal for Brest as they chase top four football and Champions League football. Well, top three as it is. Lyon 3, Monaco 2. Lacazette, Benrahma, and Wissam Ben Yedder all amongst the goals there. And then finally, Marseille 2, Lens 1, and Lacazette's former teammate Aubameyang with a goal in that one. So, three games left. PSG title wrapped up. Second and third still to play for. We've got three contenders. Monaco, Brest and Lille. Monaco have 58 points, Brest have 56, Lille have 55. It could still go anyway. Nice have 51. They're going to be in Europe next year. It just won't be the competition that they had hoped. Then it's Lens, then Marseille, Lyon, Rennes, Toulouse, who've really turned it around in the second half of the season from a league point of view. Reims, who've lost three in a row. Montpellier, who've turned things around a bit themselves of late. Three wins and two draws in the last five. Strasbourg, who are just ambling along, doing nothing. Nantes, Le Havre. Metz, currently in the relegation playoff spot. Lorient just capitulated. They're in the relegation spots, along with Clermont-Foot. Now, nothing decided in terms of relegation as yet, but it does look like it will be Lorient and Clermont to go down, and then either Metz or Le Havre in the relegation playoff. In Serie A, obviously, Inter wrapped the title up, so that is done and dusted. But at the weekend, we got Frosinone 3, Salernitana 0, Lecce 1, Monza 1, Juventus 0, Milan 0, a typical Allegri game, Lazio 1, Verona 0, Inter 2, Torino 0, 2 for Calhanoglu in that one, Bologna 1, Udinese 1, Napoli 2, Roma 2, Dybala put Roma 1 up, Oliveira equalised, Osimhen put Napoli 2-1 up, and then Tammy Abraham equalised. Atalanta 2, Empoli 0, Fiorentina 5, Sassuolo 1, getting desperate for Sassuolo at this point. Tonight at 7:45 we get Genoa versus Cagliari. So, Inter top, title won, four games left. Milan, 70 points, almost certainly in the Champions League next year. 11 points ahead of Roma in fifth. So one more win, a draw is probably enough. Then Juve on 65, Bologna on 63, Roma, like I said, on 59. Atalanta 57, but they do have a game in hand, which I believe is against Fiorentina. Then Lazio 55, Fiorentina 50 with that game in hand. Napoli 59th place, desperate. Torino 46, Monza 44, Genoa 39, Lecce 36, Cagliari 32, Verona 31, Frosinone 31, Empoli 31. So Cagliari, Verona, Frosinone and Empoli, all still at risk of relegation. Udinese 29, Sassuolo 26. It looks like it's curtains for them. Salernitana have been relegated. Where have we not gone yet? We've gone to Spain, we've gone to France, we've gone to Germany and now Italy. So we will settle into Portugal, where last night we had one of the bigger games in the league. But before we get to that, Gil Vicente 2, Arouca 2, Casapia 3, Chavez 1, Vizela 1, Rio Ave 1, Benfica 3, Braga 1, Marcus Leonardo with two goals in that one, David Neres with the other, Vitória 1, Boavista 1, Porto Menens 0, Morens 2, Estrela 1, Famalicão 0. We have Estrela versus Friends tonight. Porto 2, Sporting 2. Evan Ilson puts Porto 1 up on 7 minutes. Pepe makes it 2 on 40. Victor Gyökeres with two goals in less than 90 seconds. Makes it 2-2, 87 and 88 minutes. Marcus Edwards sent off in the 90th minute. But Sporting get out of there with the win. So Sporting are 5 points clear with three games left. 5 points clear with three games left. Win their next game, and it's going to be very hard to see them not winning the title. Sporting's remaining games, Porto Menens at home. They are currently 16th Estrella away. They are 10th. And Chavez home. They are 17th. So they play the team 16th and 17th. The title is theirs. Sporting Lisbon are going to win the title this season. Second title for Amorim. And just a shame that Liverpool were too silly to do what was right in front of their face. I'm going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll do news. And there is big breaking news in the Premier League. So we'll get to that. And we'll do the gossip from the weekend. See you in a minute. Right, welcome back. So Thiago Silva has said he will leave Chelsea at the end of the season. Everybody's known that's been coming for a while. And frankly, they should have gotten rid of him 2 years ago. But best of luck to him. I assume he's going to Fluminense. The major breaking news coming out of the Premier League is that Premier League clubs have agreed in principle to introduce a spending cap. A majority of clubs voted in favour, which will be of a spending cap, which will be determined by the amount of money earned in television rights by the lowest earning club in the Premier League. I believe it's also going to include commercial. So TV rights and commercial. If approved at June's AGM, the new model will replace the profit and sustainability regulations presently used from the 25-26 season onwards. The league's current financial rules, which have seen Everton and Nottingham Forest penalised this season, have been criticised for favouring clubs with the highest revenue. The new model is being referred to as anchoring. So, remains to be seen how effective this is. Notable that the clubs that voted against it, Aston Villa, somewhat surprisingly, and both Manchester clubs, unsurprisingly. No surprise that City would vote against it. They'll just have to find new and creative ways to bring in revenue and work around things. But I believe it's basically going to be five times the lowest club in the Premier League's revenue in terms of TV and commercial. So let's just say, I don't know, let's just say Burnley, for example, have the smallest revenue in the league this season, and they're making 85 million from TV and potentially 25 from commercial. So their revenue is 110 million, which would mean that the spending cap would be 550 million, which, you know, I think is pretty good. It is pretty good. That limits what you can spend. 550 million then is your maximum point. And I mean, if your wage bill is going to be, there'll obviously be exceptions for certain things, but if your wage bill is 380 million, that is going to limit what you can spend. So that could make things quite interesting moving forward. Obviously, you'll still be able to amortize transfer fees and the like, but it's just going to limit what you can spend. And I'm surprised Chelsea didn't vote against it. I'm surprised Chelsea didn't and the Villa did. Manchester United are willing to let Raphael Varane leave for free when his contract expires. They don't have any choice. He's out of contract. Barcelona are looking to strengthen their attacking options with Luis Diaz being one of their targets while the Reds are losing patience with him. Fair. Joel Matip could leave Liverpool this summer. He is leaving Liverpool this summer amid interest from Roma and Lazio. Manchester United are preparing for several departures in the summer to meet financial rules, with the future of Marcus Rashford to be considered. There seems to be a lot of buzz around that. AC Milan are interested in Diego Carlos. I could see that one making sense. Tosin Adarabayo has told the club he intends to leave on a free transfer with interest from Liverpool, Tottenham and Newcastle. Kairo Matoma is attracting interest from Man City, Man United and Arsenal. I wouldn't believe that. It's a garbage source. Paris Saint-Germain have faced a setback in their attempt to sign Barcelona and Spain prodigy Lamine Yamal, with his agent telling the club he is not for sale. Yeah, like, that's not a setback. There was, because you never were stepping forward. It was always going to be the case that he wasn't for sale. Christian Eriksen is free to leave Manchester United this summer if a club meets the asking price. And that's a bit bizarre. Arsenal and Tottenham are both looking to sign West Ham and England under 16 midfielder Daniel Rigg, or ex on England under 16 midfielder Daniel Rigg. Bayern Munich have confirmed they're in talks with Ralf Rangnick. I just don't understand that at all. Former Chelsea and Tottenham boss Antonio Conte has reached an agreement on a 3-year contract to take over as Napoli manager. That is great if that's true. Real Madrid will not pursue a move for Alphonso Davies this summer. That's interesting. Arsenal have opened talks with Gabriel over a new contract. Might as well keep that wage bill pumping up. Pau Gubarsi has been offered a 5-year contract, which he is expected to sign when he turns 18 in January, despite interest from Manchester City, which would have led to a lucrative contract. Bologna still hope to extend Thiago Motta's contract beyond June 2024, despite interest from Juventus and Manchester United. Interesting. Alexander Isak will be hit with a 20% pay cut if he remains at the club next season. I assume they all had Champions League clauses in their contracts, so they got paid more for being in the Champions League, and they'll get less when they're not in it, so that's fine. Bayern Munich are planning another move to sign Kyle Walker this summer. Okay, why? Jim Ratcliffe has met with Jorge Mendes, whose clients include Benfica midfielder João Neves. I wouldn't believe that. It's from the Mirror. Crystal Palace are set to join the race to sign Maxence Lacroix. I wonder, is that a Guehi replacement? Arne Slot will be appointed as Liverpool's new head coach rather than manager in a change to the club structure. Everybody's known about that. West Ham's hopes of appointing Julian Lopetegui to replace David Moyes appear to be over, with AC Milan close to agreeing a deal with the Spaniard. Barcelona are moving closer to signing Guido Rodriguez from Real Betis. He's quite good. Pau Gubarsi, same thing, contract. Juan Mata believes that Manchester United should build any future team around Bruno Fernandes. Problem there is Bruno's 29. So that's not great for building around. Tottenham have been forced to abandon plans to sign Arda Güler. Not sure they had plans to sign him, to be fair. There's more about Milan and Diego Carlos. Juve working on deals to extend Dusan Vlahovic and Federico Chiesa. And Fabrizio Romano with breaking news that Loris Karius will leave Newcastle when his contract runs out. Crystal Palace fear Mark Guehi could leave this summer. Victor Osimhen will leave Napoli this summer, with Chelsea and PSG the likely destinations. I think PSG appear to be almost done with that, getting that deal across the line. Borussia Dortmund will try to turn Jadon Sancho's loan move into a permanent one this summer. Going to be hard without Champions League. Manchester United are considering the future of Erik ten Hag, which could help their cause in bringing Sancho back. Liverpool are bracing themselves for bids up to 150 million for Mohamed Salah this summer. If they got offered that kind of money, they will sell him. And no matter what David Ornstein says, Liverpool are open for business this summer. The Netherlands defender Lateral Gertrude could leave Leverkusen alongside his manager to join Liverpool. Highly unlikely. Poland striker Robert Lewandowski wants to stay at Barcelona this summer, despite interest in the 35-year-old from clubs in Saudi Arabia. Juve and Roma are currently interested in Charlie Patino. I just don't believe that, to be honest. West Ham and Brazil midfielder Lucas Paqueta says he's very happy at the club amid speculation he will leave to join Man City. Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester United are all interested in Brighton's 20-year-old Cameroonian Carlos Baliba. Not buying that one. Leeds want to sign Nat Phillips from Liverpool. That's just a regurgitation of a story from last summer. I wouldn't imagine it's true. Manchester United and Chelsea could be competing for Denzel Dumfries. Denzel Dumfries might be one of the most overrated players I've ever seen. Everton might be forced to sell Jarrett Branthwaite. Yeah, we've known about that for a while. Surely there's other people there they can sell. Arsenal had new talks with Gabriel. Blackburn want up to 20 million for Sammy Smodox, with Brentford, Luton and Sheffield United all interested. Unfortunately for them, Luton and Sheffield United are probably going to be in the Championship. I don't see Brentford paying that much money for 28-year-olds. And finally, Arsenal and Borussia Dortmund are interested in Barcelona's 18-year-old Spanish midfielder, Brian Farinas. And there we go. I will see you all tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.